It is good to see you. It is good to see you. This morning, I'd like to study with you out of the book of John, chapter 13. We're going to take a look at this together. And hopefully, we can share something from this, take a little something from this passage that maybe some things that we haven't considered before, looked at before, thought about before, and today, I hope, we can all walk away from this enriched. I have been attending at Thayer Street for the past year. Thayer Street has come to mean a great deal to me, but this is home for me. So I'm glad to be here among you all. I really do appreciate Bruce and Mark granting my wish to come here, assemble with you today, and for me to try and give back a little bit to what this congregation has given to me and done for me. So I find myself so blessed this morning. Sometimes a preacher will have to leave a congregation. A few times we've seen it here over the years. Other congregations deal with the same issue. Sometimes a preacher will find that he is called to another place and has to work at another location. And so oftentimes that preacher will deliver a sermon, one of his final sermons. It'll be a very thoughtful sermon, sometimes an emotional sermon, but whatever the words are that preacher would say, they're very important words to that individual. And as something like a parting message, there's a lot that could be said in one of those messages. Oftentimes, you'll hear a preacher speak of, well, you need to stay strong in the faith. You need to stay strong in the faith. And that is an excellent message to leave with someone. Another thing that might be said in some sort of a final message would be, maintain your priorities. Maintain your priorities. You know, the future is uncertain. You never know what tomorrow brings. So a final message may say something about coping with change, coping with the uncertainties of life. That certainly would make for a fine parting message. Today I'd like to take with you to what looks like some of Jesus' final words as he was leaving with the apostles here. And his message is one that I think is just as fitting for us today. We're going to look at take care of one another. Take care of one another. Stick up for one another. Stand beside one another. That message, that whole theme, seems to go throughout all of John chapter 13. And while John chapter 13 is a bit of a long chapter, we're not going to read the entire chapter, but we are going to pick pieces of it. We're going to look at a great deal of it, though. For instance, we're going to look at the first five verses that were just read for us. Those first five verses speak of Jesus and his relationship with the Father. So we're going to just talk about that briefly. Then we're going to talk about verses 6 through 11 and a little bit of 36 through 38, where Jesus changes his speech, where he then begins to talk to the apostles directly, specifically Peter. Then finally, near the end of the chapter, we're going to talk a little bit about Jesus and his relationship with Judas. So if you would join me in reading verses 1 through 5. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, Having loved his own whom were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Let's talk about the relationship of Jesus and the Father and how it's expressed in this text here. Let's begin that by asking a question. What does Jesus know at this point? What does Jesus know? The text actually tells us what Jesus knows. It says, he knew his hour had come. There in verse 1. His hour. Now, this hour is mentioned many times throughout the New Testament. The hour. This hour that is coming. Let's look in chapter 2, John chapter 2. John chapter 2. Look at verse 4. John 2, verse 4. It says, now, remember, this is that wedding feast that's going on. And at the time, the wine had run out. And Jesus' mother asks him here to step in and make something happen. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does that have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. Go with me to John chapter 7. John chapter 7. Look here with me in verse 30. John 7:30, it says, now this is when Jesus is out there, he's teaching, and there are many people throughout Jesus' time here. They were always trying to take him, capture him. They wanted to hurt him, kill him, whatever. They wanted to seize him in verse 30. They were seeking to seize him. And no man laid his hand on him, because his hour had not yet come. God the Father was not going to allow it to happen yet, that he would be seized because his hour had not yet come. John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Look with me in verse 20. John 8:20. These words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no one seized him, because his hour had not yet come. Now, John chapter 12. John chapter 12. Verse 23. John 12:23. And Jesus answered them, saying, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Now, this hour, is this a good hour? Is this a good thing that this hour comes? Is this a bad thing that this hour would come? Because here we see that this hour in John chapter 12, verse 23 says that the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. That's a great thing. But in the other passages that we were reading how he was supposed to be seized, but avoided it because his hour had not yet come. So the hour has something to do with violence against him. At the same time, the same hour has something to do with his glorification. This hour is connected. It's the same hour. Look there in John chapter 13. Knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father. Look in chapter 17 of John. John 17. Verse 1. Jesus spoke these things, and lifting up his eyes to heaven, he said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that the Son may glorify you. The hour has come. Let's make some application to this. Have you ever had something in your life that was looming over you? Something that seemed to just cause this great shadow over you, and there was no escaping it. It took up all of your attention, either because you were just anticipating it and you just couldn't wait for it, or because you were in fear of it. Every minute that passes just forces you one step closer to whatever that outcome is going to be, whether good or bad. But every tick of the clock, you're closer to that outcome. And Jesus had been living with this hour hanging over him his entire life. As well read as he was of the law and the prophets, as much as he knew about what his life was for and what his purpose was on this earth, he knew this hour was coming. This hour had been looming over him his whole life. There's no doubt that as he walked among the people every day, that as he taught the people, as he listened to people, as people came to him seeking answers, seeking healing, he was reminded of the hour that was to come. And we're not speaking of a literal hour, but a time. A time designated by the Father that would involve terrible violence against him and yet simultaneously reveal his glory. He lived with this hour. Tie into that, speaking of what Jesus knows, he knows that now Judas's heart has been turned against him. Satan has already entered into the heart of Judas, and Jesus knows that as well. He knows all of this is coming. Look at verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands. Jesus knew that he had received everything from the Father that he was going to receive. He had received it all. Previously, when those who went to kill him would try to seize him, he was able to escape, no doubt with the help from the Father. But that time was over now. Jesus had received the good things that he was going to receive. He had received everything, it says. And now the hour had come where the Father was going to back off and let things take place that needed to take place. Now Jesus would be seized when the time was ready. Look at the end of verse 3. And that he had come forth from God and was going back to God. Back to God? Well, that's great. He's going back to God. That's what he's always wanted. He's always wanted to go back to God. He's always wanted to be reunited with his Father. He misses his Father dearly. And here he is, knowing that he would ascend back to God. But what does that mean? What does that mean? It means he must die. The only way for him to be reunited with his Father is for him to first face death. He is going to go back to God and be crowned as king. This is what Jesus knows. His hour had come. He had received all the help he was going to receive, and now he must die in order for him to return to the side of his Father and be crowned king. Now that's what's going in his mind. And what does he do? Where's his focus? He lays aside his garments and washes the disciples' feet. Jesus, the Son of God, at this moment, knowing he was going to die soon, knowing that he was going to be tortured horrendously, his focus is on his disciples and serving them. He was the Son of God. He could have called for anything at this time. He could have called for luxuries, comforts, anything he could ever want to eat, any clothing he could ever want to wear. He could have called for legions of angels, we've read. He can do whatever he wanted, but what did he call for? A towel and a basin of water. That is amazing. That is how important his mission was to himself. Verse 6, 6 through 11. Jesus then begins speaking to Peter. Then he poured water into the basin and began, verse 6. So he came to Simon Peter. He said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, What I do you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Peter said to him, "Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew that the one who was betraying him, for this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." He's washing the disciples' feet, and he comes to Peter there in verse 6. He comes to Peter. So he didn't start with Peter. He started with a different apostle and worked his way to Peter. Now think about Peter and what he might have been thinking as he watches Jesus washing the others' feet, and now Jesus is pulling the basin towards his own feet. We can see how Peter responded. "Lord, do you wash my feet?" We know inside Peter's mind, inside his heart, he doesn't support this. But as Jesus draws closer to him, what's going through Peter's mind? This isn't right. This is not right. He should not be washing our feet, certainly not mine. That has to be what's going through Peter's mind. He respects Jesus as the teacher, as the Lord. He's not going to subject Jesus to such a lowly act as allowing him to wash his feet. Well, then Jesus is there. Jesus pulls the water basin up to his feet, takes Peter's feet into his hands. "Lord, do you wash my feet? Do you really think you should be washing my feet? Do you think this is the right thing for you to be doing right now?" is what Peter is asking. In the same way that a wife might say to her husband, "Are you wearing that? Are you wearing that?" They're not really asking you if you're wearing that, because you are wearing that. The question is, have you looked in a mirror? Are you really going to do this to yourself? Verse 8, "Never shall you wash my feet." Peter has no interest. Now let's learn from this. What can we learn from this? We learn that sometimes the submissive spirit not only gives, but receives. The submissive spirit not only gives, but receives. I was a part of this congregation for many years, and I know firsthand that this congregation has some of the greatest givers I've ever met. The greatest givers I've ever met. And sometimes that giving is to compliments, giving of our time, taking time to use their talents to help others. But there's something too about receiving. And sometimes we, Christians, we are just not very good at receiving gifts from others. Someone might trip and fall here at the front of the auditorium, and there's no doubt in my mind that many people in this congregation would run to the assistance of the person who fell. Every person in this room, I have no doubt, would run to the person and offer them a hand to help them up. Now, what if in the course of that, you yourself fall, and someone offers you a hand to help you up, and you say, "I'm fine. I'm good. I got it. It's just a little blood. I'm fine." And you don't accept the hand that's been extended to you. If Jesus had asked at the table there, "Would someone here wash my feet?" How many of them would have rushed to wash his feet? Every one of them. But when Jesus offers to wash one of their feet, nope, not happening. "Never shall you wash my feet." He refused, Peter did. He refused to receive the gift of the Lord. And Jesus said, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." How terrible of a thing it is when we need help and we don't ask for it, because we have a hard time receiving gifts. How terrible is it that when we need help, that we think, "That would be embarrassing. That would be embarrassing. I can't. I'm too proud to ask for help. I'm too self-sufficient to ask for help. I would be too embarrassed to ask for help." It's hard. It's hard to put ourselves aside and let others do good things for us. But it's just a tragedy. It is a tragedy to deny someone else the blessing of giving. The Lord said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive. But can anyone give if no one is willing to receive? For every giver, there's a receiver. We do good for one another when we give and receive from one another." Let's learn how to be gracious recipients. And Jesus begins to speak to the rest of the 12. Look at verse 12. "So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, 'Do you know what I have done for you?'" Now this washing wouldn't have only just taken a few minutes. It would have taken some time. This task would have taken Jesus a good chunk of time. It was quite a process. And I can imagine that scene, that they were probably all around the table, quietly waiting as Jesus shuffled around. I can imagine the scene that it was probably pretty quiet in there, as I'm sure all the apostles were very uncomfortable with what was going on. And of course, Peter was the only one we have record of speaking up about it. They're probably all sitting there uncomfortably, and the only sounds that you hear is the water dripping back into the basin, or the basin being dragged across the floor to the next apostle. And here you have Jesus, and he asks them, "Do you know what I have done to you?" Now, obviously, they knew what he had done. He washed their feet. But is that really the question that he's asking them? Is that really what he wants them to think about? He's trying to get them to consider a deeper meaning behind the simple act that he performed. Look, verses 13 through 17. You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Jesus is telling them that the important lesson here is not that they need to literally be washing one another's feet, but they need to serve one another with humility. Humility that leads to holiness, and holiness that leads to happiness. The first step of holiness toward God is humility toward God, a willingness to serve others. You know, we go out in our culture, you know, you go to a restaurant or you go to a salon or a barber or wherever you might go. And there's one thing for sure. We as a culture, we expect excellent customer service, don't we not? Do we not? We expect excellent customer service. And if we don't get it, we may complain. We want to receive it, but are we as good about giving it? Someone might say, well, I like this church, but the people here, they don't minister to me as much as I want them to. Maybe your feet have only been washed a few times by the other members of the congregation. But is the real question how many times your feet have been washed? Or is the real question, how many times have I washed someone else's feet? How is my humility? How am I doing with that? How is my service to others? Am I doing what I need to be doing before I criticize others and how they're doing? You know, every Christmas there's a movie that comes on, and some of you, it might be a must-watch movie, A Christmas Carol. It's on the TV all day long at Christmas, A Christmas Carol. Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge, he was a bad man. He cared nothing about others, only for himself. Scrooge became synonymous with someone who thought just like the character in that movie. And by the end of that movie, he had transformed. He had become someone different, hadn't he? He started to put others first. He learned humility. And that led to holiness, leading to happiness. He couldn't help himself but shower others with gifts. Now, you know, well, it's just a movie, right? Is it a hokey story? Can we just pass that off as, well, no one can really do that in real life, transition that far from one end of the spectrum to the other. I think we could. I think we absolutely can. What happened to Scrooge in that movie is nothing all that out of the ordinary. There's no reason every one of us couldn't be the same if we wanted to be in our own lives. To put others first. To humble ourselves. That teaching is parallel to what we see here in John chapter 13. We'll be better off if we do it, and so will others. If Jesus were here today and leaving a final message, it just might be this very one. Learn humility. Serve others. Just do it. Verse 18 through 22. I do not speak of all of you. I know the ones I have chosen. But it is that the scripture may be fulfilled. He who eats my bread has lifted up his heel against me. From now on, I am telling you before it comes to pass, so that when it does occur, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who receives whomever I send receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. When Jesus had said this, he became troubled in spirit and testified and said, truly, truly, I say to you, that one of you will betray me. The disciples began looking at one another, at a loss to know which one he was speaking. What you do, do quickly. Look, move to verse 27. After the morsel, Satan then entered into him. Therefore, Jesus said to him, what you do, do quickly. Speaking of Judas. Now you see there in verse 18 that Jesus is citing Psalm chapter 41, verse 9. And at that time that David wrote this, he was going through the rebellion of his son Absalom. And David's trusted advisor, Ahithophel, deserted him and joined Absalom in the rebellion. And later on, Ahithophel regretted his actions and went out and hung himself. And that is parallel to what we see here with Jesus and Judas. Judas is about to betray Jesus, will regret it, and will go out and hang himself. Have you ever considered that Jesus washed Judas' feet? Have you ever thought about that? Certainly he didn't leave him out. He washed Judas' feet. What was going through Judas' mind, I wonder sometimes, as Jesus carefully scrubbed his feet with a towel? This is the man who would start the chain of events that would cause Jesus to suffer terrible agony and die an excruciating death on the cross. This was that man. And Jesus held his feet in his hands and had the opportunity to harm him, but did not. Instead, he washed his feet anyway. Jesus washed the feet of his betrayer. Let's learn something from this. Is it possible to serve people we don't like? Is it possible to serve others that we don't like? The next time we're given the opportunity to serve someone and our heart is not in it because that person hurt our feelings one time 3 years ago and we don't even remember what was said and it holds us back from doing something good for them, think about Jesus and the time he washed Judas' feet. Verse 19, from now on I am telling you before it comes to pass, so that when it does occur, you may believe that I am he. Jesus is telling his disciples, look, nothing is going to happen outside of God's control. Nothing is outside of his control. Whatever is happening, it's happening because it's part of God's plan. Keep the faith. Don't let go. There's nothing that can happen to you that is out of God's control. Just keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. Serve one another. By way of conclusion, let me just toss out a last couple lessons that we can take from this passage here in John chapter 13. After this, the lesson will be yours. This washing of the disciples' feet is a sign to us that we are responsible for keeping one another clean. We need to be concerned about one another. We need to be responsible for one another. Hold each other accountable. It's my job to look after you. It's your job to look after me. Because it's family here. It's family. Number two, it's a lowly act. It is a lowly act to wash someone else's feet. We should never have the attitude that there is some service that is too low for us to do for our brethren. There's nothing too low to do for them. The grunt work, the unpleasant work, the thankless jobs done around, just do it anyway. Do it anyway. Because when you do it anyway, you show that you really do care. That's how your brethren really know you truly care. Jesus saw a task here that needed to be done, and he did it. He wasn't too proud to serve those he loved. It's too easy to say someone else will do it, right? Right? Someone else will do it. And then it never gets done. Look for the opportunities to serve your brethren and serve. You know, as a church here, as a congregation, as a family here, people get to know each other very well. It's an intimate setting. Is any one of us too good to do something for another one of our family members? We need to be active in each other's lives. Jesus could just as easily have said, "Take up your towel and follow after me." I hope that the words I've shared with you this morning will be of some help to you, some help to this congregation. And I'm so thankful once again that the elders allowed me to come out here and see you all and to be with you once again. It's been a bit overwhelming to spend even the short period of time with you all. It's just so good to see you all again. We haven't talked about becoming a Christian, but there's nothing more important that you could do than to become a Christian. If you are a Christian and you need help, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask. Your brethren are here to love you, to help you, to pray with you. They're here to give to you. Don't be afraid to receive. If there's anything the congregation can do here to help you this morning, please come to the front now as we stand and sing.